the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 280, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. This week, Matt and I dive into Eric Mika's departure for the NBA, and we discuss what that means for the men's basketball program. Also on the agenda, football signee Zadik Dinkelman, my dislike for Stanford, and BYU players trying to make it in the NFL. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. Follow this podcast and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. Find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to Matt and I right now. Matt, some people have some issues with your fashion sense.
Well, there's a lot of people who have an issue with my fashion sense, Adam.
True enough. So here's where it started, okay? All right, so we'll go straight to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
So our good old friend Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney. Sorry, I was delayed on that one. I was going to make a joke about him being old. That he was our good old friend.
Oh, yeah. Which is funny if people think like, oh, was he like their college roommate or something? No, we've actually never met the dude, but he's our friend.
We like Sweeney. We go way back. Sweeney's been here since the beginning.
Since the beginning, every episode, though he gets challenged every time we do the baseball show to make it all the way through that show. And I almost did lunch with him when I was out for business in Fresno. So it didn't end up working out on our schedules. But anyway, so Matt, here's what happened, okay? So what he said is, should we discuss on the next podcast the legitimacy of a podcast host whose Twitter avatar features a red hat? And he's talking about you!
Yes, he is talking about me, and the hat is red. As a matter of fact, I recently, since this all started, you might notice that I even changed my Twitter avatar.
No, you didn't.
To a close-up of me wearing the red hat.
Oh, I was about to say, no, it's still the red hat, dude. So it's a red...
I doubled down.
It's a red Patriots hat.
Yes.
So you and I, Matt,
have
a different perspective because of our Patriots and Red Sox love. I'm not anti the color red. I just am not. Communism, you know, better dead than red. I mean, that's a long time ago. Right? I own a red car. So for once in your life, I'm sticking up for you.
Wow. I don't even know what to do about this.
Touching?
I thought for sure you were going to hound me on this.
No, I'm not hammering you. Yeah, you're not going to wear that red hat to a BYU Utah game.
Probably not.
Right? Like, you know, you'll wear your BYU blue stuff. Probably not.
Listen, you can't say, you can't. I don't deal in absolutes. Only the Sith deal in absolutes.
That's what the Jedi said, and look how that turned out for them. They all died because they wouldn't deal in absolutes. Yeah, see? Just flipped your little Star Wars reference on its head. Anyway, Matt, let's get into it and go to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Matt, Jamal Williams. I'm starting to read some of these stories, and I think the press covering the Packers has no idea that they're taking McCarthy's words for it on who the lead running back will be. I still think Jamal Williams has a very legitimate shot of being the lead running back.
Yeah.
And this article that at FanRagSports.com seems to think that he's competing for that second running back spot. I don't believe that's. I think they're all competing for touches. Everybody is competing for touches. I think that's how the NFL works. That running back one and two are what we do on our fantasy teams. Most NFL teams, and the Packers especially, find matchups and find situations, and they put who in they think's going to exploit that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They talk about him in this article about being a one-cut running back who fits into their zone blocking. I mean, the guy is actually really high on Williams in this
article. Oh, yeah. He is.
In many ways.
Yes. No, he is. He talks about he's not worried about his pass blocking, even though he didn't do a ton of that at BYU. But anybody that watched Williams over the years know he was not afraid to mix it up ever, right? Didn't shy away from contact as a blocker, but they didn't use him as a blocker very often. And the last few years didn't use him as a pass catcher, though early on in his career he caught quite a few. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's not a third down back in the NFL style of a guy that's, you know, more of a wide receiver even than he is a running back. He is a running back. But, you know, we'll see. Other NFL news, we didn't do our NFL sound effect. Is it appropriate to do it now?
Yeah, you just kind of jumped right into it, didn't you?
Is it appropriate if I do that now?
I think it's always appropriate.
With the first pick in the NFL draft, the terrible Cleveland Browns select. So in the Deseret News, their morning links a day or two ago, they had something about Kai Nakua. And they talked about how, you know, his signing with the Browns, that they were he measured third among all safeties in this year's draft in the spark metric. Matt, I had never heard of the spark metric.
No, I have no idea what it is. I don't understand it.
So basically, it basically is averages per position based on their like speed and height and all these other things and where and how that correlates to successful NFL players. And he ranked third behind a couple of these more well thought out guys, including Jason Thompson of Utah. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. Obviously, I think if people really thought he was the third best safety in the draft, if the NFL held that opinion, he would have gotten drafted, right? But that being said, I think there's some chance here that he could do that. And then in the same discussion, talking about Algie Brown with the Seahawks, basically the same writer, I believe the name is Gary Davenport of Bleacher Report, says that Algie Brown is a bruising 250-pounder at a position where the Seahawks have a need. Matt, make your call now. Who's most likely to make the NFL an NFL roster, Kai Nakua or Algie Brown?
It's got to be Kai Nakua. I mean, no offense to Algie Brown, but I mean, I don't even know that this is close.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's Nakua. Staying in the NFL, Matt, Dennis Pitta, we'll talk about Dennis Pitta. There has been some discussion in the press that covers the Baltimore Ravens about the depth of wide receiver for that team. And Joe Flacco was asked this in a press conference, and he basically laughed at the question and said he doesn't think they have an issue. The writer in this particular piece at cover32.com says, in effect, that probably he's not worried because they're gonna implement a multiple tight end scheme where Dennis Pitta acts as a wide receiver. Matt, are you buying or selling Dennis Pitta as essentially a wide receiver?
Oh, I'm buying Pitta as an essentially a wide receiver.
That's what he's been doing. That's what he's done his whole career. Yeah. So this is nothing new, but it's interesting. You know, and obviously Pitt had a very nice year, very incredible if you think about a bounce back year last year after several years of dealing with injuries. So it could be another big year for Dennis Pitta, seeing that the options are a little bit limited in the passing game.
I think it will be a big year for Dennis Pitta. I think they're counting on it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Matt, before we move on to our big topic of Eric Mika, a couple of things. First, the second book of my science fiction series, the Sycorax series, launched on Monday. It's called Seeds and Masters. The first book is called Caliban's World. You can find these exclusively on Amazon. If any of our listeners happen to be in Kindle Unlimited, It's part of that program, so you can read it for free for everybody else. The Caliban's World is available for only 99 cents this week only on, well, I shouldn't say that. I might put it back down to 99 cents. We'll see. But this week, and it'll be gone next week. So check that out if you haven't already. And Matt Bleep, the podcast, also like this one, available at DeseretNews.com/podcasts. Our latest episode was basically an episode for you. Did you know that?
Oh.
It's about Star Wars. We had a Star Wars blogger on and podcaster, and Becca Benjamin, and she came on to talk about if you like the movies, what other media, TV shows, books, comics should you go to next? So it's kind of a guide.
Yeah, which is exactly what I needed. That's my very question in life.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go. Well, Matt, without further ado, it's time to talk about Eric Mika, who was nice enough to the program to declare himself eligible for the NBA draft, to declare himself for the draft and enter and sign with an agent early enough that BYU could go out and find somebody to take his roster spot. But poor timing for us since we recorded last Monday night and he did it on Tuesday. So we didn't get to talk about it, but we're going to talk about it tonight. All right. Are you ready to talk about this?
Yeah, that's emotionally funny. We had a long conversation about it, and then 24 hours later, it's like, well, there's that.
Well, and somebody on this podcast predicted he would enter the NBA draft, and somebody else on this podcast, whose name might rhyme with lat, said he didn't think he would enter the NBA draft. So I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, Matt. But
That's not how I remember it.
Really? Huh. If only it was recorded. If only that conversation was part of the public record.
Our voices are very similar. It can become very confusing.
Well, actually, the funny part about it is our brother Don texted us saying, see, Matt was right. And I don't think he was trying to be funny. I think he honestly thought you were the one that had said it. So even our brother can't tell us apart.
See, that's just sad. So, come on, Don.
So let's walk through this, Matt. Nathan Cunningham at LawlessRepublic.com talks about three things that BYU can do post Mika. All right. So we'll get to his NBA stuff here in a minute. He mentions these things: go small and own it. So basically, you're not going to have a lot of big men. You'll have Yoeli Childs for sure, and a few others, but you're not going to be deep like we all thought it was going to be last year. And then next, dig in defensively. So got to get back to defense, which you and I have talked ad nauseum. And then the third thing he mentions is develop the rest of the roster. So basically, we got to develop deeper on that bench than what Dave Rose and his staff have been able to do over the last couple of years. Matt, anything to add to that group? Do you like his list? I mean, what do we need? What do they need to do to be successful without the best player from last season?
Well, I think the digging on defense that's true regardless, right? Everybody's been talking about that. You know, the going small and owning it, I think really what he's saying here is they've got no choice but to go small at this point. So they so they should just go all in.
Yes. Don't run
that's
a post
the way
offense.
I would look at it.
Yeah. I mean,
you just gotta move on. You're not that team.
No, because you've got now. You used to last year. You had before Davis got hurt. You had three players that you could run a post offense through. You know, Childs developed into that. Davis could do it, and obviously Eric Mika. This year you have I only think you have one. Right, you just have Childs. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really an option for you.
The biggest thing, what do they do without him, is the players on the roster today, especially those with experience, Hawes, Emery, they have to be better than they were last year. I mean, that seems simplistic, but in reality, if that team's going to improve over last year, which I think is a possibility, even with losing Mika, you just got to – those – the best players on the team have to play at a higher level.
So you believe that even losing Mika, this team could be better next year than they were last year?
I'm not saying it's likely, Okay? Not saying it's likely.
You're just saying it's possible. It's statistically possible.
I think there is a better than zero chance that they are better, mainly because of what they might do defensively. But I don't think it's likely. I think, quite frankly, they're very similar to the team in final results, obviously not style and that kind of stuff. I think they're very similar. I think they don't quite make the tournament. You know, I don't think it's a disaster though. But we'll get to some of that stuff here in a minute. So Matt, the Lone Peak 3 era is gone. Done. 1 year and it's out.
Yeah.
Now Missions obviously kinda made this and they're not all the same age. Matt, here's something I was gonna ask you. I don't think these guys asked for this. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
I think they were just three friends / high school teammates that ended up on the same college team, and yeah, they probably contributed to the hype by talking about how, you know, they won at the high school level and they'd anticipate being big winners at the college level. But you know, this has not gone smoothly, the Lone Peak 3.
Well, you know, we've talked about it before. Where else does this happen, right? And this really develops as a result of what BYU is and where BYU is, and the idea that because these guys were so successful as a high school team that we, you know, should just buy in to a Final Four run just for that reason, you know, never really made a ton of sense. Now the fact that they were good enough to do it, and I think in some ways. I still believe that the talent's there. You know, if you keep Mika, I think you have maybe not a Final Four run, I don't know, but a deep run in the tournament. You know, because that becomes a lot about chemistry, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the expectation for this team and the probably got a little bit out in front of them.
Yeah, yeah. So Jeff Collin, the Deseret News, had an interesting piece where he basically interviews Steve Cleveland, former BYU coach, current BYU TV analyst. And here's some quotes, Matt, and I'd love your reaction to Cleveland's quotes. This is from Steve Cleveland. My gut feeling, so he's not quoting facts, but his gut feeling, is Mika's experience was a difficult one. I think there were some really unrealistic expectations on these young people. They've gone through some withdrawal. And I think what's going to happen now is they'll come together. New staff, new opportunity. Actually, we like where the team is headed. They certainly would be better with Mika here, but I believe they can reach their goals and do the things they want to even without him, which would mean contending, he doesn't say this, but reading between the lines, contending for a WCC title and making the NCAA tournament, right? That's kind of Dave Rose's goals for the program. He's talked about that. Matt, your take on this, unrealistic expectations that you just talked about. Do you think this Mika leaving takes those expectations away and maybe frees up Haas and Emery to play with maybe a little less weight on their shoulders?
See, I don't know that it. See, I think it has less to do. At least I would hope that it has less to do with taking the expectations and the weight off than it does about forcing the team to change a little bit about what they're doing. And you know, we've talked in the past about the Kyle Van Noy and Ziggy Ansah phenomenon, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, where together, you know, because they were both there, they were able to do some special things. You know, that happens pretty routinely in team sports, right? The combination is just right. I think we saw some of that, you know, when we had the before and after with Collinsworth, right?
Yep, for sure.
So I think in this situation, what this does is this is going to force the team to do some other things that probably – play to strengths of these remaining guys better than what they were trying to do last year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That if they are better, that will be the reason why, in my opinion. I would hope, you know, at this level, I think there is something to the level of pressure and scrutiny these guys face based on the expectations that people feel. But I think at a certain point at this level, you move on past that, and it becomes, you know, about what's going on the court, what's going on in practice, and how is this team able to put something together that's going to be successful in games.
Now, I don't know how Dave Rose internally motivates his team, okay? And I am not a coach, except I have coached T-ball at a kindergarten level, okay? That's my expertise. I know you have a little bit of, you know, little league coaching
experience. Basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing. Big time men's college basketball, girls T-ball. It's the same. It's the same.
I've coached T-ball. I've coached junior high traveling basketball. Uh-huh. And I recently coached a church team to a state tournament victory. So kind of a big deal.
Hey, our stake tournament's this weekend. Old man Adam's going. He'll be part of that team.
You're gonna play?
Gonna play? I think I'm one of our starters.
I'm concerned for your welfare.
You shouldn't be concerned for my welfare. I play basketball for 2 hours every Thursday night.
All right.
And let's just say sometimes I'm not terrible. So the last thing Cleveland said in this article quoted by Jeff Call was, besides the fact that all of a sudden expectations are down and everybody will feel like this team won't be as good and now they'll overachieve. That's kind of how it works sometimes. Matt, do you think this team overachieves? I mean, I just talked about I think it's possible. Do you think it's likely this team eclipses expectations? Because expectations are going to be low. It's going to kind of be like, you lost Mika. It's almost the same team. Yeah, you got Celius back and some of these transfers. But gosh, if you could only win 22 games with Mika, can you even win 20 without him? Don't you think that's how a lot of fans are going to feel?
Oh, absolutely. And the expectations will be too low. The hangover from losing Mika is going to be long and it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
And going into this season in the fall, I think people are definitely still going to be feeling it. Expectations will definitely be low, and that gives them a chance to outperform.
So, Matt, where does Mika rank all time? There was an article on Rivals where they ranked the best big men in history, and it's, I'm sorry, no disrespect to Mitch Harper, who wrote the article, and I have some respect for Mitch, but these rankings are terrible. Bradley can't be your top guy ever. He can't. He played for 1 year and blocked shots. You know what I mean? Like, he can't be the best big man in BYU history. I don't think he's even top three. I don't think he's top four. You and I have talked about this before. I'm not sure he's top five. Like, if you were drafting right now, them in their prime but you can only take the seasons that they played in, right? I'm taking Kosich over him.
Yeah, easily.
I'm taking Arujo over him.
I think I'm probably taking Arujo over him.
Michael Smith?
And I probably take Michael Smith.
And in his prime? So, also on it, he then lists Mika as number 7 behind also Jeff Chapman and Fred Roberts. Now I think, again, he's smoking dope. He's trying not to be recency bias. I watched Chapman. I did not watch Fred Roberts, but Mika's better than Chapman. Chapman never had to be the guy and never had a season like Mika had last year. So, all due respect to Mitch Harper, I think this list isn't great. Where do you think Mika sits? Is he a top five big guy?
If he's not, he's close. I'd have him probably at 5 or 6.
Okay, so let's play the game.
I think he's right in there in kind of the Fred Roberts, Jeff Chapman, Mika. You could play around with those three in those three slots, in my opinion.
All right,
pretty easily. But at the same time, I don't know. But if you look at, but where does it all comes? It also comes down to where I would land Sean Bradley.
Yeah. Bradley's a tough one.
Sean Bradley lands in the top five. And so if Sean Bradley falls out of the top five, there might be room for Mika to get in there.
Yeah, and the question is, would you rather have Bradley, that 1 year of Bradley, than this last year of Mika, right? And that's, and I don't have a good way to quantify that because, you know, a lot of the advanced statistics that I love, they don't go back to 1991. So I can't, you know, easily go back and try to compare them across time. Not that that's perfect anyway, because it's not. But I look at it, Matt. So above or below Kosic? Below, right? Mika, meaning Mika.
Below. Yeah.
Arujo. Below.
See, sometimes I feel like I get too high on Arujo, but I'm gonna say below.
Yeah, I think you can safely say he's below. Arujo had a heck of a career at BYU. So what about Michael Smith? I'm taking Smith over Mika.
Yeah, I'm taking Smith.
Fred Roberts, again, that's a long time ago. Never saw him play, but he was a heck of a player. We talked about him on our all-time team. Better than I remembered, statistically, and scored 20 points on that a game on that Elite Eight team in 81. So,
yeah, I think you got to take Roberts.
Yeah, I think you probably do. The point of this exercise, Matt, is if he's top five, it's barely. And it depends on how you value that one season of Sean Bradley. Okay, the guy only averaged 15 points and 8 rebounds a game, Bradley. Okay, so whenever people throw him at the top, I always have a little bit of a problem with it because he was not, I watched him, he was not great offensively. I mean, you know, and he couldn't, and he was okay at shooting free throws, but he was a shot blocker and a defensive force. But I mean, 5.2 blocks a game—that's pretty impressive, isn't it? So Matt, we have a couple of
it's okay.
Let's call them the Mika bag questions. Are you ready for the Mika bag?
Mika bag.
So a couple of. Couple of thoughts here. One is from Josh, that's at JJ_Crow3 on Twitter. He asks, how concerned are you guys about what Mika's decision says about the state of the program? I.e., he sees no opportunity for growth by returning. Matt, do you think Mika saying that he didn't see an opportunity for growth is an indictment of the program or something else?
I think he sees more opportunity for growing his wallet by leaving.
Hmm.
I mean, he just sees opportunity. He sees opportunity at the next level. And, you know, I think that that's, you know, when you think about potential injury and those types of things, I think there's a lot of factors into it. So boiling it down to that into he sees an opportunity for growth by returning, and then using that to make some type of evaluation on the program, I think is a little bit of a reach.
I think, I'm not saying we had Jerem Jordan on last week and asked him about, you know, is this program in chaos or disarray or any of that? And Jerem says no. I think it may not be in disarray. I don't think it was fully functioning last year, that team. And I don't know what was going on. But you know, for a team that had three guys that went to the same high school and were supposed to have great chemistry, I don't think they ever developed great chemistry. Do you?
No, they didn't. They definitely did not.
So here's the other part to me on this question. I think Mika's getting bad advice on the NBA. I think he's getting bad advice. I think his game, he worked for the summer to extend his range and do some other things with his footwork. And had proven that, he could have been a late first-round draft pick next year. And this year, he may not even get drafted. And that's not good for his wallet or his future in the NBA.
That's right.
So I get what you're saying, and I think that's why he did make the decision. I just think it was the wrong decision. Scouts are not all of a sudden, unless something changes between now and the draft, I mean, he's a late second-round draft pick at best at this point. And that's not a great path.
No, it's not. But what we will find out is, you know, maybe they are getting words. I mean, it only takes one team.
That's right. That's right. And again, I'm not doubting whether he could play in the NBA. I'm just saying I think he could have benefited from another year. If he starts hitting threes in college, then all of a sudden his whole draft stock changes. Now, he can do that in the NBA. And learn that as a pro, but you know, it's they're not all of a sudden, you lose that opportunity to enter the way you want to. So,
right.
Justin Whiting asked this, that's at Jay and Whiting on Twitter. Do you think Meek even wants to play in the NBA? I think he wants to go be a big fish in Europe. Don't blame him a bit. Hashtag tweetbag Matt. Do you think Meek is long? Is this kind of a, well, I'm going to dip my toe and see if it works in the NBA. And if not, it's Europe for the big, big Ivan Drago lookalike.
You know, if you just rewind this kid's life back a few years, you don't even have to go very far to get to a time where the college basketball wasn't even on the radar for this guy, right?
Yeah.
So for him to be in the place he's at now and think, and he's looking at the experience some of these other guys that have gone on before him have chasing their NBA dream, and maybe I think that's an interesting theory. He's like, you know what, I might as well just embrace the inevitable. I'll go give it a shot at the NBA, but I'm likely a European player. I can go over there, be a big fish, make some money, have some fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's an interesting theory.
Yeah, I think he does want to play in the NBA at this point, but your point about his aspirations even a few years ago in high school, this was a guy who was asked in high school about the NBA and basically kind of punted the question to, I've never really thought about it. When he was a junior and a senior, I don't remember the time frame. It's sometimes hard for us as fans, who many of us maybe when we were 5 years old said we wanted to play in the NBA, like myself, to understand that not everybody grows up with those dreams, right? And he ends up being 6'10 and incredibly athletic. I end up being 5'9 and not nearly as athletic, right? So if I had been nearly 6'10 in high school and been good at basketball, if somebody had asked me about the NBA, I would have been all over it. That I'm going, right? Oh, yeah. And I, in my head, I would have been thinking, I'm going to the NBA. Not everybody has that dream when they're 8, right? They don't care or don't see it, right? So it is interesting. I think he's set on the NBA for now, but I think that's probably more likely he plays significantly in Europe than he ever plays significantly in the National Basketball Association. So Matt Sweeney makes a second appearance in the tweet bag.
Sweeney,
who has
got to redeem myself? I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Well done. Well done. Who has more game appearances in their respective professional league, Mika or Taysom, NBA and NFL respectively? Hashtag tweet bag. Matt, who plays more NFL game appearances, Mika or Taysom? That one's easy.
Do preseason games count?
Nope. Regular season games only. It's got to be Mika. There's 82 games a year. All he has to do is play one season as a bench player, make it into 40 games. And
actually, he doesn't even need to be one season. He can sign a 10-day contract.
Yeah, it's Mika. That's easy. If you want to talk about years of service, that gets a little bit more interesting, but I probably still go with Mika.
Or what if you said, which one, who will play more games this year?
This year.
I'd take the NBA season through the winter. So the next season for their professional, for
still
their respective professional league.
Taysom's not playing in any games. Even if he somehow becomes the backup quarterback to Aaron Rodgers, which I think is not likely. He'll never play. Rodgers doesn't miss games.
No, you're right. Okay.
I say that, and Rodgers will blow out his knee in the second week. All my Packers fan friends are going to hate my guts, and Taysom's going to be in there and start 13 games or something. But wouldn't that be weird?
That's so crazy. If he got a chance to start in the NFL as a result of injury.
Well, yeah. It is crazy on so many levels of, that great year he had, we were all thinking like, oh my gosh, this guy could be an NFL starter, to the point where earlier this spring, you and I talked about whether he would even try to play in the NFL, right? Before the pro day, there was kind of a radio silence. Is he gonna even try? And maybe he'll be a tight end or running back in the NFL. And now he's going to an NFL camp as a quarterback on a team that has one great quarterback and kind of a collection of misfits after that. So, interesting. We'll see. Matt in the file this under not surprising, Jamal Ates transferring to Southern Utah. I feel like this is just missed potential here.
Yeah, so how did this happen?
I don't know. And quite frankly, I always thought he did all right when he was on the court. I never understood his lack of playing time, to be honest. There were guys that I just thought were not nearly as talented and didn't play as well as him. But you look at his career and you go, he basically was non-existent, right?
Yeah.
He was just non-existent. I mean, he played three seasons in so far in college basketball, one at UNLV, which as a freshman was his most minutes per game. But, you know, he, over his college career so far, I mean, let's just do it at BYU, 7 minutes and 2.6 points a game. Right? Like, I thought he played
not really, really this year. Contributor.
No, and that's the thing is, I say that, but he averaged how many minutes a game this year? Six? Like, I say he looked all right when he came in, but you're talking about a tiny sample size, right? I mean, he played 163 minutes total.
I don't know. That'd be interesting. How many games did he appear in?
He appeared.
I mean, what do you really see? I mean, what do you really know about
27 him? Games this year, 22 games the year before, 4 games at UNLV. You know, here's a guy that's been in college basketball for 3 years. I really thought he was going to be something. I didn't think he was going to be like All-American or anything, but I thought, you know, this is a guy that might average 10 and 7, you know, 11 and 5 or something, you know. Give us a post presence, maybe be able to post up sometimes, maybe be that, you know, post player off the bench kind of guy, you know? And
I was pretty high on him at the beginning of last season.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I thought he'd be a big contributor. But good luck to Jamal Ates at Southern Utah. We of course, wish him well. Matt, last tweetback question from basketball. Jared Roundsville, that's at J Roundsville on Twitter, asks, which new or returning hoopster will have the most impact on next season's team? Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag go Cougs. Matt, who do you got? Who's the biggest impact player on next year's basketball team?
So, but this is anybody who's returning?
Returning, whoever, anybody that's going to be on the roster next year. Returning, new players, JV transfers, RMs.
Nick Emery.
I've got a different answer, but yours is a good one.
I'm going with Emery. What do you got?
Elijah Bryant.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
He's the point guard.
Not out of the question. That's not crazy.
It's not crazy. I think the offense runs through Elijah Bryant, and I like it because if the offense runs through Bryant and it's him taking people off the dribble and posting up, you know, less physical guards, I think that opens up a lot of room for the shooters. You know, similar to what a similar model to Kyle Collinsworth. You know, different players, but I think there's something there. Either of those are possibilities. I don't know, besides, is there anybody else you think has a realistic chance of being that biggest impact player next year?
I don't know. It's Childs? Kind of a...
I don't think so.
I think you get a bunch of other people after that I feel like are pretty closely grouped together.
Yeah, Hawes, you know, if he takes a huge leap maybe, but I'd bet more on Emery than Hawes. So,
yeah.
Well, Matt, I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about basketball over the course of this summer. Let's shift gears to football. Gary Payne on Twitter, that's at FastBreakGP, He asked this, can you spend a minute or two on the rabid dislike Adam has of Stanford Cardinals? Or Cardinal. No, I'm going to say Cardinals. The Stanford Cardinals. He says,
they're not the Cardinals.
Fans, stupid tree mascot, what is it? Matt, we don't really have enough time on this podcast for me to really go through this, but I'll go through it very, very briefly. Okay? And by the way...
Wow, so shocker, you have no problem answering this question.
None at all. Okay, let's go through Adam's dislike of other programs first from a ranking perspective. Okay? Utah for rivalry stakes is always number one. Okay? Next is the Cal Bears. Okay? My dislike of Stanford is way less than Cal. If we want to get into Cal, I can go off on Cal for days. The band, the attitude, all that stuff. My biggest problem with Stanford, quite frankly, is just some snobbery. Just some snobbery. The Harvard of the West. I just don't like it. I don't have anything against their fans or people that went there, honestly, though.
Their band is pretty obnoxious, too.
It's not my kind of place. It's not my kind of town, shall we say. But people that want to root for the Cardinals, they can root for the Cardinals if they want to.
I don't think they refer to themselves as the Cardinals, but that's fine.
What do I care what they refer to themselves? But a lot of this also has to do with Stanford and Cal are probably mostly responsible for keeping BYU out of the athletic conference they should be in. That's what it comes down to a lot. They don't want BYU in, and everything makes sense geographically, everything besides Stanford and Cal's snobbery, everything makes sense for BYU to be a part of that conference. And don't tell me about the academics when you have Oregon State and Arizona State in your conference, okay? Don't talk to me about research institutions, blah, blah, blah. It's not about any of that stuff, and we all know it's not. So, anyway. All right. That felt good to get off my chest a little bit, Matt.
Wow.
With some recruiting news, Zadik Dinkelman, that is an actual name, committed to sign with the Cougars as part of the 2018 class on Monday. He is nephew of Ty Detmer, right? Ty Detmer is nephew.
He sounds like
nephew?
A cartoon character. It sounds like a cartoon character.
Zadik Dinkelman. Nice. Zadik Dinkelman. We'll get to a really good tweet bag questions here in a minute. Matt, 6'5" quarterback prospect. Sonny Detmer is his grandfather and high school coach. And of course, his other uncle, Coy Detmer, is part of the coaching staff and played in the NFL as well. Dinkelman, I'm 14 years old. He basically says, you know, this is because, you know, Ty is running, you know, a lot of Sonny's offense. You know, what Dinkelman said was really it's the same system and the same stuff I run now. he had been committed to LSU, and when the coaching staff changed, they told them that he wasn't their number one guy anymore. So he has committed to BYU. And, you know, he's not, I mean, he was an LSU commit. This is a fairly big recruiting get for the Cougars, Matt. 6'5".
When was the last time we stole a guy from LSU? Now, granted, he kind of didn't really steal him. I mean, they kind of let him go, right? But
well, he could have gone in there and tried to compete, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming LSU wasn't pulling their offer. They were just being honest with him and hoping he'd walk, right? So Jeff Johnston on Twitter, that's at JeffJBYU, says, how do you feel about Zaphod Beeblebrox committing to BYU football? Reportedly a heady player, he says in parentheses, which, by the way, is a play on words there, or I should say a pun related to the character. He's referring to. Matt, did you know who Zaphrod Beeblebrox was?
No, I just thought he was trying to make up a weird name.
No, and he's not captain of a local Quidditch team. That's actually a character from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Zaphod Beeblebrox, not to be confused with Zadok Dinkelman.
So does Zaphod Beeblebrox, is he going to wear number 42 when he plays?
I don't know. That's an excellent question.
You see what I did there?
No, I don't.
It's 42. Isn't that the number in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that's the answer? Life, yeah. The universe, and
yeah.
Everything?
Yeah.
Well. See, I try to branch out. I try. I'm extending the olive leaf of nerdiness to you, and you just swat it away.
So,
Kate, like the third geek reference I've made tonight.
I know the Sith don't deal in absolutes. Now, there's going to be people angry that you quoted a prequel movie, but you know what I say to those people? Suck it. All right? They happened. The movies happened. They're part of the canon. You may not like them, but that line, by the way, is a terrific line. Only the Sith deal in absolutes. Tejon Karoma, Matt, was named to the Remington Watch List, which is the national award for the best center. This is the second time in a row. You and I always talk about these things whenever Cougars are named to them, and I'm not really even sure why. Because do we ever talk about who wins? Unless it's a BYU
no.
player, right? We never talk about
no.
it. It's only interesting.
But I'll tell you, other than Karoma, do you know who else I would have named to the Remington Trophy watch list?
Who's that?
Karoma's biceps. You've seen the dude's arms.
I have.
They deserve their own spot on the watch list.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. And so do most of the defensive linemen who've tried to get through him in the past couple of years. I think they would agree with you. And some people that he may or may not have struck with his arm.
I want nothing to do with it. Looks like the guy's got bowling balls in his feet.
I'm telling you what, if a fight breaks out again for BYU football, just hope if you're an opposing player, you're not standing next to him. And you don't have to worry about Nakua
anymore. No, you don't want any of that.
Because he's in the NFL, so you don't have to worry about Kai anymore. Matt, we're going to finish on this.
He might be coming out of the stands. And Nakua's fast, but he's not fast enough to beat that.
No, it's not. So, Matt, we're going to finish on this. Friend of the podcast, Dick Harmon, had an article in the Deseret News this week that is referenced by one of our listeners. Hope Springs Eternal is the name, his Twitter handle name. That's at Barry R13. He says, did you see the article from Dick Harmon about BYU teams being head cases? That's not exactly what Dick said, but close enough. And not performing in big games, what are your thoughts? Matt, I have some thoughts. Do you think BYU programs are a bunch of chokers? And he quotes
basically
a fan saying,
question, right?
They always break our hearts. They break our hearts every year. They get close, and they have a really talented team, maybe even like this last year's basketball team thought we were, or football teams, some of the more talented ones under Bronco Mendenhall recently. They break our hearts, Matt. They break our hearts.
Every team breaks every fan's heart.
That is it, isn't it? Like,
kind of. I mean, but if you look at this article, there are some interesting examples here, right? I mean, you look at, like, the men's volleyball team. I mean, they came pretty close
to
winning the whole thing.
Yes. Can you call them chokers? They made it. Like, choking if it would have been them losing in the first round of that tournament. Not losing the
choking
Ohio
is
State.
When you blow like a 3-1 lead, right?
Yeah. I mean, I understand the softball. The softball loss to Utah is crushing, okay? I get it. Like, you're ahead and you make defensive mistakes and lose. You know, the rugby one is ridiculous. It was a terrible loss, but rugby has won national championships. So putting them in this group is kind of almost silly, right? You know, but you talk to a fan of every sports team outside of like Alabama football and a few others, and all of them have these stories about their teams breaking their heart. All of them. Purdue football. Are they going to have any less of a sad story? Their sad story.
It's kind of more sad.
Yeah, maybe more sad. We don't even get close enough for them to break our hearts. But I was on campus and a student at Purdue the year Kyle Orton was quarterback. Purdue was ranked in like the top 15 and had game day, college game day there against Wisconsin on campus. And they lost on a fumble when Kyle Orton tried to brace himself on the ground using the football. Or was that the fumble against Michigan? Regardless, they lost three games in a row and basically fell out of, you know, out of the top 25. Every team who doesn't win the championship breaks their team's heart, which means in college football, it's 120-some teams that got their heart broken.
And you've always got, like, some lofty expectation for your team, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to
yeah.
often come just shy of that.
Yeah.
Because you think they're better than they are.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, injuries or whatever else happens, and it's just, you know, and I think Dick's having fun with this. Honestly, I don't think the article is really saying this. And his fans, we like to do this. I think it's part of being a fan. We like to, if we're not winning, we like to come up with these crazy reasons as to why we lost. You know, goats or curses or whatever. You know, we like to gravitate towards that stuff. But in the end, you know, for everybody's heartache, somebody else had to win. You know what I mean? So,
yep.
You know, we've been on the other side of that. You know, the Miracle Bowl. You think if you're an SMU fan, you view that game with a lot of warm nostalgia?
And then the funny thing is we look at that and we're like, oh, man, what a comeback. And they look at that and they say, oh, man, what a meltdown.
What a freaking collapse. You know, and I have a couple of good friends that are diehard University of Michigan football fans. And you know what they say about that 1984 Holiday Bowl? Number one, they think their team choked. And number two, they hate being the team that gave up the championship to BYU. They don't like being that team, right? They don't like being the trivia question answer to that game, right? You know, and we've had BYU football and basketball have had some awesome moments in the last 20 years. So forget about 1984 and the glory days, quote unquote. I mean, we had a deep tournament run. We had that, what was that, that NCAA game that went into a couple overtimes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously some Taysom Hill and Tanner Mangum heroics over the last few years that have been heartbreaking for other teams. Heck, there's the
Gamer.
Riley Nelson high five game against Utah State, right? Jimmer. I mean, if you look at this, quite frankly, sometimes when I hear BYU fans complaining, I just want to go, guys, this is not as bad as it can get. I promise. I rooted for that basketball team in the 90s. Trust me, it can get a heck of a lot worse than it is today.
Oh, man, that was bad.
It can get so much worse. And football can, too. Football can get a lot worse, Gary Crotonera. I'm looking at you. Where we're not even sniffing bowl games. And we're losing in embarrassing...
Bowl games?
Yeah.
Bowl games?
You know, now people will say, hey, Adam, we have lost in embarrassing fashion to Utah for like 18, 15 years in a row or whatever. And that's fair enough. But I don't think BYU's snake bitten or any of that stuff. I just think, yeah, it happens. Somebody's got to lose. Unfortunately, it's everybody else except for one team. So,
yep.
Matt, we have coming up in the future here. We've got next time we're going to talk about our all-time basketball team post this past year, but we're going to do it in a unique way. We saw this on Twitter where it's kind of like a fantasy draft where you have to put together a team and the players all have values. We're going to do that next week. We're also going to start next week our 2017 football preview. What?
Ooh.
In May? That's crazy talk. We're going to be talking about three opponents next week: Hawaii, UMass, and Portland. It won't be a very long discussion. But we're going to look at every...
As a matter of fact, I think we just covered the Portland game right there.
Yes, 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 we did. We're going to talk about each opponent and kind of break down what's happening in their offseason, coaching, personnel, stuff like that. Matt, we also have coming up in a few weeks, we're going to do that Time Machine episode that was suggested to us. So stay tuned for that. Matt, anything
between
else?
Between now and then, we'll be... Yeah, I was just going to say, between now and then, we'll be busy inventing the actual time machine.
That is correct. That is correct. We will need to invent the time machine so that we can do it. Basically, the time machine was go back in time and fix any game or event in BYU sports history. It'll be fun. That came from Justin Whiting. So we'll be doing that in a couple of weeks. And Matt, I'd love to talk about Marvel movies with you, except you have to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, hopefully this is the weekend. I know. True. I keep saying that.
Yeah, you keep saying that.
We've had a lot going on.
We don't believe you, but it's all right. You'll wear a red hat and go to your movie, your geeky movie. Anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. You could, of course, always follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at, what is our Facebook?
Really?
I don't know. I have it bookmarked. Who doesn't do that? It's facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Does anybody use actual addresses anymore? Do they do that? Or do you just Google?
I go to Facebook and I just use the search function.
Yeah. You can do that too. You can email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week, as I said. We'll have a few different things. Not sure what night yet. But stay tuned for that. Thanks for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!